From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, scooping ice cream, working the counter, flipping burgers. For decades, the summer job was iconic for American teens, a rite of passage, the norm. And now, it's not. What happened? This hour, On Point, we unpack why fewer teens are looking for and finding summer work, and what's lost when they don't. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's happened with teen summer jobs? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On his show last week, late night host Jimmy Fallon joking about the pros and cons of summer jobs.
Pro, getting a job as a camp counselor. Con, playing fun games like call the parents and remove the tick. There you go. Fun games.
Fun. So fun.
Kids love it. Pro, getting a job at an ice cream shop.
Oh, fun.
Con, giving the stink eye to people that sample more than three flavors. Hey, yeah. I'm on to you, man.
I'm full.
And finally, pro, menial labor teaches kids an important lesson. Con, try to become a YouTube star because working sucks. There you go.
Try to become a YouTube star. Pros and cons, but the fact is, far, far fewer American teens have those summer jobs at all these days. We need to update the material there, Jimmy Fallon. Joining us now from New York is Carl Vick, correspondent at Time magazine. He wrote the article headlined, Where Did America's Summer Jobs Go? In the current issue of Time. Carl Vick, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. Also with us from New York is Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic, where he covers economics and labor markets. He recently wrote about the declining number of teens seeking summer jobs and the complicated reasons for that. Derek Thompson, welcome. Great to have you here.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Carl, what's going on? What do the numbers look like?
The numbers, you know, the numbers are really all really clear. They're steadily downward, especially since the turn of the century. Recently, it's like down a point a year. This is what we're measuring is participation rates in the summer economy. In if you're a 16 to 19 year old, and the Labor Department asks you if you're looking for work, that is, if you consider yourself as like in the market for a job, would you take one if there were one there? It's gone from like when we were kids, like. In the late 70s, early 80s, it was like 60%, 58% would say yes.
I saw 72% by one here from 1978 of 16 to 19 who had worked in the month of July 1978.
The numbers get a little different if you seasonally adjust. But the trend both ways, adjusted or not, is this declining. And it's down to like 35% and then against the 58 I said and 40, I think around 40% if you're looking at the 72.
That's a huge fall off.
Huge.
What's happened? Are the jobs not there anymore? Is somebody else doing them? Do the American teens not want to do them?
The jobs are there. It goes up and down during the Great Recession, there were fewer jobs there. But, in general, the jobs are there. Summer work is still summer work. I reported the story by going out to a boardwalk and, the Jersey Shore. And, there's still, like you say, there's ice cream to be scooped. There's, there's flying frogs to be recovered from the lily pad.
In the carnival games there.
In the carnival games, the boardwalk games. Yeah. And there's lifeguard chairs to fill. That's all there, but a lot of kids are, one out of three kids still is looking for work in the summer, and they can still staff it. But there's also like foreign workers. They bring people in on student visas, on J-1 work exchange
from
visas
from Bulgaria or wherever. Yeah.
Yeah, from all over. It used to be, back in the 60s, 70s, it was a lot of Irish and Brits. But anybody who's got some English, there's Eastern Europeans, there's Filipinos, there's Bulgarians. And as older workers who are staying in the workforce, maybe they're not doing the carnival jobs, but they're like – they might be – if you don't have the money you thought you would have to retire, you're maybe still working – in retail or some other temporary what might be a starter job for a kid, you'll just take a sort of a part-time gig that's displacing a young person in theory. So that's
I see plenty of people who look to me over 65 bagging groceries lately. That used to be a teen summer thing,
for instance.
Derek Thompson
delivering papers.
All that. Derek Thompson, this is complicated, as you tell us in your piece in The Atlantic. Some will look at this and say the jobs aren't there. Others will say there's some kind of loss of moral fiber here. Kids just aren't looking for jobs. Take us into the texture of why this is happening, Derek.
I concur with everything Carl said. One thing I'd like to point out, though, is that it's not as though young people are staying home playing video games so much more often that it's a one-to-one replacement of ice cream scooping for Xbox playing. Young people are much more likely to take summer classes than they used to. The number of young people taking summer classes has actually quadrupled since the 1980s. And you see quite clearly that young people are more likely to be not only taking these summer classes but also doing unpaid internships. And one funny thing about unpaid internships is that they're unpaid, which means that the Bureau of Labor Statistics doesn't actually count it as a job. Funny trick there. So a company that is essentially employing a teen but not paying them makes it look to the government statistics as if the teenager is just being lazy and not working, when in fact it's the HR department of that company that's actually being lazy by not paying the teen worker. So you have that going on. And then finally, I think you have a shift in culture. And this sometimes is a little bit murky to talk about because culture isn't as empirical as economics. You can't actually, you know, we can see the numbers of growth in summer classes, but you can't see the numbers in cultural change.
But we know it's powerful peer pressure and all that.
But it's peer pressure, exactly. You know, if you're a freshman, a sophomore, and you see the cool, taller, good-looking high schoolers scooping ice cream every summer, then you look forward to scooping ice cream every summer. Or if you see them, you know, sitting in those lifeguard chairs, you want to be a lifeguard. But if instead you see them going to school or taking, you know, unpaid internships at, you know, their parents' friends' companies, then that's the cultural norm that you aspire to. And so they ask non-working teens, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, ask non-working teens, do you wish you were working? Would you like to work more? And theoretically, you know, we should expect that if the numbers of working teenagers are going down, then we should see more teenagers wanting to work. But in fact, teenagers are less likely to say that they wish they were working. So I think that we see a cultural change in addition to this. And so summing up, I think that, yes, there are labor market changes, a growth in older workers and a growth in low-skill immigration. Two, there is a growth of young people taking summer classes. And then three, I think you have these cultural shifts.
Carl, I was blown away by the summer school, summer classes numbers. I mean, if you go back, I think 1985, about 10% of teens in summer classes, and now more than 40%, almost half. That seems to me a huge portion. What is driving that? It used to be sort of like remedial education. I had to do it for math in junior high. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
But now 42%, that's a huge portion taking summer classes. Why?
I think it's another piece of this cultural shift that Derek's describing is you know, whereas once summer school was, right, punitive, this is almost like detention, having to be in a classroom in the summer. I think now it's considered like aspirational, like investment, like cool. I don't know if it's cool, but it's you're preparing for life down the road for your career. Maybe this it goes hand in glove with the internship. I mean, basically. This is sort of what we're trying to describe is sort of the sea we all swim in, the water we're all in. It's like things have, you know, people get much more serious about their long-term income potential, their long-term, their career basically, much earlier in life. And for good reason, because what's happened, you know, over the last couple of generations is a pretty big division between you know, haves and haves not, and the great variable in how you do in life is how much education you have. That's the most consistent thing.
Yeah, but so talk about long-term interests. You know, there are other long-term interests here, aren't there? I mean, growing up on a farm, there was always a lot of work in the summer, but I worked off the farm as well as a janitor, worked construction, and that meant I worked with all kinds of people. And I understood, you know, how tough some of these low-paying jobs are, and I developed a kind of, first, there's work ethic, but also kind of empathy for people who do these jobs, Carl.
For sure. Absolutely. You know, this is the number of social levelers in this country is declining and declining. And by social leveler, of course, we mean just places where everybody meets and everybody sees each other as an equal and starts out in the same place. It used to be the military. Maybe it was playgrounds and organized sports at some level and public education. And even if it wasn't, if you came from a thing, parents would say, you're going to work this summer, find yourself a job. And I don't care what it is, work on a road crew, work. I did the same stuff, painted houses, factory work. And yeah, you know, even if the only thing you learn is, boy, I sure don't want to be doing this the rest of my life. You also then do understand some people will be, and maybe you're gonna consider all public questions and a lot of life with a little more empathy than you would if you just aren't exposed. If these are only if it's a service economy and we're divided between the served and the servers, that's
not so great.
So healthy.
Plus, yeah. Derek, I mean, there are plenty of kids and families who need some income from these young people during the summer. And if that's just not the thing to do, you know, you're supposed to have an unpaid internship. That hardly works if you need the money.
I think it's a very fair point. Let me take a stronger position in terms of defending these teenagers.
I'm not attacking the teenagers.
I know you're not. No, I'm not suggesting they're being attacked at all. But I would just like to, at least for the purposes of, you know, exploring this intellectually, take a strong position in defense of what they're doing, which is to essentially trade during their teenage years working time for school time. Since the late 1970s, when the summer job peaked in terms of popularity.
Yeah.
Since the 1970s, the percent of recent high school grads enrolled in college has grown from about 50% to about 70%. If we believe all this research that says that going to college is good not only for your short-term prospects but also for your long-term earnings prospects, this should be a good sign, not a bad sign.
Derek Thompson, please stand by at The Atlantic. Great to have you with us. And Carl Vick from Time Magazine with his piece, Where Did America's Summer Jobs Go? Rihanna here with Work, featuring Drake behind us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Just get ready for work, 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 work. It's a me heavy work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. It's a me better work, 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 work. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's going on with summer jobs and teens. Fewer teens have them. Fewer teens are looking for them. We're looking at why and what it means with Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. He's been writing about this in the recent issue. And Carl Vick, correspondent at Time Magazine, his piece, Where Did America's Summer Jobs Go in the Current Issue of Time? You can join us this hour. What do you think about all this? Do teens still want summer jobs? The old ice cream scooping, lawn mowing, burger flipping, take whatever you can get kind of job? And teens, do you now only want resume building positions, experiences? Now, does burger flipping not cut it anymore? Internships, service trips are the thing. Don't teens still need to make money in the summer? Lots of response from people online here, Carl and Derek. Mary says, no summer jobs. She says, visit Maine, thousands of unfilled summer positions there. It sounds like they'd be happy to have some teens there. Kylan writes to us, though, no one would hire me in the summer because I wouldn't be able to continue work in the fall. If she moved for it, cost of room and board and travel expenses made moving to a seasonal tourist spot not worth the money I'd make. Martha said, thinking back on her experience, worked at a children's zoo in Belle Isle, Detroit, taught me responsibility as a teen. Derek writes to us, I taught archery at a YMCA summer camp. Good friends, good times, only a couple of near misses. Lots of experience in those summer jobs. Carl, Derek, stand by in New York. Listeners from around the country here. Robert in Charlotte, North Carolina. Robert, what do you see?
You know, I have two sons. One's 19 at NC State, and another is 15 going into high school, and the 19-year-old really doesn't want a job. He just feels like minimum wage is beneath him. And then the 15-year-old can't find a job because nobody will hire under 16.
So one would but can't have the other. What, the minimum wage just isn't sufficient? What's your minimum wage there, Robert? Do you know offhand?
I believe it's like $7.25.
Yeah, that's the federal.
Minimum wage was, I think, $3.50 when I was a kid.
Yeah. Let's look at that. I mean, that's interesting right there. 19-year-old who's just not interested in it, Derek, partly because of what the minimum wage is. Now, you point out there could be other reasons, but is the minimum wage less in, you know, constant dollars today than it was when summertime employment peaked in 1978?
It absolutely is in most states. Two things that are happening here. One is that it's possible that rising minimum wages in some states might have a negative impact on the employment of teenagers. Let me put on my macroeconomic hat for a second. Let's say I'm an employer and I would only hire a teenage worker for $5 an hour. That's how I value the hourly productivity of a teenage worker. If the minimum wage goes to $10 or $15, then that teenage work is no longer worth it at $5. So there's been some research that suggests that at the margins, rising in minimum wages might actually discourage employers from hiring teenage workers. But another thing might be happening as well. Remember what I was talking about earlier is that families and teenagers might be thinking of college prep or summer classes as a substitute for summer work. And if you say, you know, a $7 minimum wage is really low and it's not going to help my mom, it's not going to help my dad or my brothers or even, you know, me sort of supplement my allowance or something like that.
Yep.
But I do think that graduating from high school on time or having more classes, being more competitive for college is more valuable, then you might make the calculation that the summer class is more valuable than the minimum wage job. And so both things happening together might have the impact. So yes, essentially, minimum wage and summer work might be interacting with each other in these interesting ways.
So you're saying it could be a very hard-headed economic calculus that teens are correctly doing there. On the other hand, even if it doesn't pay very well, sometimes you just need the money. And then you get into who needs it and who doesn't. Gwen in Wayne, Oklahoma. Gwen, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. Recent millennial here.
Great. Somebody's backing up near you, Gwen. Don't let them roll over you.
So I'm only 20 years old, and so I'm part of this generation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went to a school where there was a big divide in financial status. So there was a low income and a high income. And on the low income side, me and my friends, we would work all throughout the year. Some of us would support the household, and some of us just needed to pay our car insurance or whatever.
Sure.
You know? And it was very obvious that we were falling behind our, you know, higher class counterparts. They went to summer internships and got to build up their college resume. And, you know, college is really a requirement these days. So, you know, you could see them getting their resumes and winning all the scholarships that would really help the low-income guys more.
Yeah.
While we're having to work just to stay afloat.
So yeah.
The summer job is now more of a negative rather than a positive. It's something you have to do, not really something that builds experience or anything.
That is a hard-headed, but no doubt a lot of truth in that explanation for what's going on, Gwen, and I really appreciate your call. I mean, Carl Vick, are colleges driving this in a way? Is it always the case that a college is going to look and say, well, this person did a service trip, you know, to build a housing in Nicaragua, and this other person worked flipping burgers. Do colleges always advantage the non-paying sort of enrichment experience?
In my day, I mean, a college application was a one-page form. I mean,
your day's in the rearview mirror, baby.
It's way back there, and you can't blame kids for being for what the caller just said. You know, for having a ride. And then people know on the ground level what matters, and what we've sort of and Derek's research. I mean, he's got a chart in his story that shows this one. It's literally one for one. The chunk missing out of the workforce is the chunk. It fits exactly into the space of the increase of people going to college from high school. So it's like one-to-one. They're like pivoted up. It flipped up. So we're really talking about a culture of summer, of youth, and whether you get to have a mindless summer or you get to have a sort of who cares what kind of job, and you have your summer nights and you have a little money in your pocket.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're salting it away. But if you know who gets to have that now? These people coming from Bulgaria. I talked with a Croatian, a guy, you know, serving pizza on the boardwalk in Point Pleasant Beach, New Jersey, and he's a law student. But in Croatia, you go to law school for free. And
so he gets to have the classic American summer.
Exactly. Oh, they've watched these. It still exists in the movies.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Caddyshack.
And they watch these movies, and they come, and they suddenly, you know, they land at JFK, and they see the New York, and there's a boardwalk, and they feel like they're in a movie. And they're getting to kind of have – it's not carefree. They're kind of a cream from their society.
Yeah.
He's a law student.
Yeah.
But he's learning English and he's networking and he's getting some resources and assets that matter in where he's coming from. But
having a good time after hours, maybe even if it's tired after a long day's work. I mean, does that mean, Derek Thompson, that the American teens who do go out there and get a straightforward, good old fashioned job are suckers somehow? Are they wrong to do that?
I wouldn't say they're suckers necessarily. You know, they're making decisions that make sense for them and their families and their local job markets, and I wouldn't want to prejudge. But it is quite clear that that people who are graduating from high school are graduating with a lot more credentials than they used to, that there's a bit of an arms race when it comes to finishing high school. There was a statistic in a Bloomberg report on this very subject, the decline in teenage work during the summer, that found that the percentage of high school grads completing with the following portfolio: 4 years of English, at least 3 years of science, math, and social science, at least 2 years of foreign language. The percent of graduates with that portfolio has sextupled, grown by a factor of six since the early 1980s, wow, during the exact same period that the share of teenagers taking summer classes has quintupled, grown essentially by a factor of five. What does that all mean? It means that people are graduating high school with more stuff, with more extracurricular activities, with more advanced degrees, with more advanced classes, with simply more classes. And as a result, exactly what the last caller was talking about, there's pressure to build your portfolio in high school rather than scoop ice cream is very real.
All kinds of response here. All over the place. Sarah says, my brother and I worked at local sporting goods store all through high school and college. Lots of great memories. Steven says, raised on a farm, think of it as childhood long unpaid internship. Yeah, I understand that. Lori says, worked in a drugstore, a photo processing lab, a waitress, a record store, all through. Even when I got my first job after college, sometimes one job, sometimes two or three. Now, Lori writes to us, I see help wanted ads all over town looking for summer help. But Tyler writes, it's obvious. In college, if you want a career after graduating, you better be doing summer work, internship, research in your field. No time for the traditional summer job. Frank is calling from Detroit. Frank, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great.
I'm the father of three teens in college. In high school, the wife and I, we never asked our children and never required our children to get jobs. I believe that the result of that policy has been three kids who are on scholarship in university. So now we treat their scholarship as their job.
Yep.
The maintaining of their grade point averages so they maintain those scholarships is their job. And our local university, Wayne State University, you ask why so many kids are going to university in the summer, they offer a 30% discount in a credit hour for a summer class. So it's, you know, there's a very good reason.
Come and get it.
Personally, Tom, I want to say our work life is going to extend to we're 70 plus years old.
Yeah, yeah.
So we really need to start working at 15 years old. Come on.
Frank, you got a very clear-eyed view of it, and I really appreciate that. Frank, with three kids in Detroit, I mean, and you hear him there, Derek, saying, look, he wants his kids to treat their scholarship as a job. They can work till they're 70 on the other end. What's the rush, he's saying?
Yeah, I am extremely sympathetic to his interpretation of the story. I think that, you know, whether or not all callers and all listeners are going to agree that school is a job, it's certainly work. It certainly takes time. It's hard. You might not be paid for it unless you're like, you know, a PhD student, but it's certainly work. And the question that we're really after here when we look at the decline in teenage jobs during the summer is, have they stopped working? And the answer is no. There is a statistic that the OECD keeps track of. It's called NEETs, N-E-E-T, neither in education, employment, or training. These are young people around the world who are essentially doing nothing or as close to nothing as is statistically discoverable. And it's basically found that the share of young people who are doing nothing, who are NEETs, hasn't budged since the 1990s, even though teenage jobs have declined since then. More people are simply doing other types of work, and typically it's either unpaid work as internships or it's educational work and in summer school.
Liz in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Liz, thank you for calling.
Hi. So I am 19 years old and I am a college student. I just completed my first year of school and I found the whole conversation really interesting, particularly in the fact that for me to even make going to college a possibility, mm-hmm. I have to work multiple jobs. And this is something that I started doing the moment that I graduated from high school. I had a job multiple years while I was in high school while maintaining like a high GPA and doing many extracurriculars. And so I think it's very interesting that there's that contrast because for me, I have to work a job to make school any kind of a reality. And at that, like not a minimum wage job, but hopefully something that's much closer to like $10 an hour than like $7
an hour. It's just not an option for you to think about, oh, never mind, I won't work.
Exactly. I have to work. It's the only way that I can make like the dream of like financing a better life in the future is to work right now so I can pay for school. It's too expensive to not.
Liz, I really appreciate your call. I mean, we've got to be real about that, too. Not everybody can just coast on internships that don't pay and know that it will all work out. Carl Vick, Derek Thompson, please stand by in New York. Stephanie Hightower joins us right now from Columbus, Ohio, president and CEO of the Columbus Urban League. It's a nonprofit there working to provide resources to African Americans and disenfranchised groups. For the last several years now, a half dozen, she's run a summer jobs program through the Urban League there. Stephanie Hightower, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. So talk to us about the need. I mean, you're working to get jobs to teens. And is it to get them work experience or to get that paycheck? Or do you ever worry that they should be doing something fancy schmancy instead? How do you look at this challenge, Stephanie?
Well, Tom, please know that the jobs program, summer youth employment program that we put on here in Columbus, Ohio at the Columbus Urban League is one that is funded by the county through TANF dollars, which is temporary assistance for needy families.
Okay.
And those young people ages 14 to 18 who we find summer employment for are basically those families that are below the 200% poverty line.
Yep.
And all of these young people are actually eager to have a job. We only went after a grant this year for 200 young people, and we had over 2,500 young people on a waiting list.
Wow.
We have a huge waiting list that's still available. So I guess, you know, when I look at my interpretation of this is that, number one, we have young people who want to work. Sometimes these summer salaries will be the income for the family, and a lot of times these families definitely need to have their young people working. But secondly, what I think is important here to note is that a lot of times when you have institutional poverty that's going on and generational poverty,
yep.
you have young people who don't have the same background of understanding work and what work means. There isn't someone in the home who has been working.
Yep.
And so these jobs are something that are basically they are of value to the urban community, and we must figure out how to continue to keep these programs going. We do an intensive work readiness, 5-day residential camp for these young people to get them ready to work, because what we find in our community is sometimes we don't have the ability to have in our public school systems in particular, they don't have career exploration available. And so what we do is try to find opportunities for these young people to explore different career opportunities, and we also give them that foundation they need to be ready to go to work.
Stephanie Hightower, please stand by there in Columbus. We want to dig in. It sounds like you're describing the choice, the option of not working as a kind of privilege in the community that you're working with at the Columbus Urban League there. Carl Vick with Time Magazine, Derek Thompson with The Atlantic in New York. Please stand by. Summertime Blues, Eddie Cochran. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm a gonna raise a fuss. I'm a gonna raise a fuss.
for my baby. Try to get a date, my boss says.
No die, son, you gotta work late.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's going on with summer jobs and teens. Fewer have them, many fewer. Fewer are looking for them. And we're looking at why and what it means. Stephanie Hightower is with us. She's president, CEO of the Columbus Urban League, where they work to put teens to work. And you heard her say they rustled up 200 jobs, had 2,500 people on the waiting list to have one of those. So it's not as though there's not a need and an appetite in Stephanie's neck of the woods there. Carl Vick is with us from Time Magazine, his piece, Where Did America's Summer Jobs Go, in the current issue of Time. Derek Thompson has written about this very compellingly for The Atlantic, his piece, The Surprisingly Complex Reasons Why Teenagers Stopped Taking Summer Jobs. Culturally complicated and more, as he shares with us here. You can join us this hour. What about you, your family, your teen, yourself? Teens, are you out there? It's summertime. Are you out on your way or at a summertime job? Lots and lots of response online here. Mike says, got a job as an electrician's helper summer after junior year in high school. 23 years later, own my own electrical company. No college, just work. Here's Go Big Rev says, walking beans on our farm in Nebraska. The invention of Roundup meant the end of sore backs and dew-soaked pants, but also a rite of passage. Tanisha writes to us, my niece has applied for jobs in April, but they still haven't even got an interview. They started talking about this, trying to get jobs in January. They've been proactive, just hasn't happened for them. 800-423-8255. Stephanie Hightower, in your neck of the woods, you've put up a whole program. You use your institutional heft to go out and talk with employers, I'm sure, to arrange this. If a teen in the community there in Columbus just wants to go find a job without you, can they do it?
Well, probably they're going to have the same challenges that has been mentioned earlier. I will say this about young urban youth in particular. Until we begin to build up minority and small-owned businesses mm-hmm. in the urban core, then it really doesn't lend or give these young people an opportunity to have those types of employment opportunities. I also agree with the one caller who called in and talked about apprenticeship programs. What we also have to begin to realize, and we have to be able to communicate in our communities, is that apprenticeship programs are extremely valuable for young people. Everybody's not going to college,
yep.
nor can they afford to go to college.
Yep.
And I tell everyone all the time, when an electrician or a plumber comes to my house, I usually have an attitude because they've charged me anywhere from $50 to $60 an hour to come in. And these are middle-class wages and middle-class jobs that for whatever reason in our country we've gotten away from really advocating for. So, again, my biggest push right now is how can we build more minority-owned businesses in the urban core who can then employ our young people in the community.
And that is a big deal. Have the economic infrastructure right there. Let me get a call from Las Vegas, Nevada. Renee is calling. Hi, Renee, you're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a high school senior. I'm about to start my first year of college this fall, and this is my second year doing a summer job.
Great.
So I was really surprised to hear the statistic that, it's
30, 35, 40% is all that would do it, yeah.
I was so surprised. I kind of understand it. I came from a high school that was very divided socioeconomically, so there are the students that can definitely afford to not work over the summer and do their internships or go on vacation or do service trips. But for me, it was sort of the next step to get a job. I come from like a low-income family, and my dad actually didn't want me to get a job. I was the one who brought up the idea, but he said, no, you should focus on school. So many more of us are going to college, and we just need more creative ways to build up our resumes. So, you know, maybe a job at the movie theater or at, yeah. you know, a food place isn't as prestigious as service trips or internships or volunteering. That's what I did. I volunteered.
But the whole internship, Renee, from your experience there in Las Vegas, the whole internship thing, did that look open to you? Did you know that that was important? Did you think it was important for college application?
I thought that it would be something that I would do in college, not necessarily high school. It was sort of a surprise to me to see some of my peers doing internships because I thought it would be more of something that college students would be doing. So it's something that I'm going to wait to do.
Renee in Las Vegas, congratulations on being headed on your way to college there. And we wish you very good luck with the whole thing. I mean, Derek Thompson, this kind of resume building requirement there, imperative, seems to be pushing down younger and younger. You know, Renee said, well, I thought about internships, you know, in college time, but not in high school.
That's right. Pressure is pushing down younger and younger. And also the school year is starting earlier and earlier. One reason that I've heard that some employers might be loath to take on a teenage worker is that it might make sense to have a teenage worker for a few months if you can have them into September. But now more high schools are starting, or at least some of their sports teams are starting, to take up these kids' time in the last week of August, second week of August. And that makes it more difficult for summer employers. I do want to make one comment on Stephanie's point about Columbus and in particular helping low-income teens get summer jobs. It is absolutely true that there is both a ethnic component to summer job distribution and an income component. White teens have been much more likely to take summer jobs since the 1970s than black teens. If you look at the labor force participation line of black teens throughout the year, through the 1970s, 1980s, what you would expect to see if they were taking lots of summer jobs is a bit of a bump, right, during June, July, that it would sort of it would pop up and then come back down for September. But instead, what you see is something that more resembles a flat plane. Black teenagers have for decades been much less likely to take summer positions than white teenagers.
And Stephanie is saying that in that community, you just don't have as many economic opportunities because there's not as vibrant a business community in the first place.
That hits it right on the head. Not only do those neighborhoods have fewer job opportunities, but also their families might have fewer connections to companies that offer internships and part-time jobs. And so summer jobs, I think it's important to note because there is a lot of nostalgia around the practice of a summer job. But if this isn't nostalgia, it's nostalgia that's particularly held among white populations who are much, much more likely to take summer positions than black teenagers historically. And so I think that's just important to point out as we're keeping this issue of nostalgia for summer work in our head.
In part because those jobs were available right there. Stephanie, as you hear all the talk about resume building, how do you think about that? Are you rolling your eyes? Is that like an upper middle class problem or dynamic to you? Or does it seem like another world from what a lot of the teens you're working with are facing?
Well, roll your eyes is probably just not even, can't even begin to describe
okay,
it.
Fair.
You know, I agree with what Derek just said, is that when you don't have a vibrant economic structure in the urban community, and when you don't have parents who have the same social capital as their counter or our white counterparts, middle class white counterparts,
yep,
you are absolutely right. It does present the fact that you don't have enough of those jobs. But the other part of this is when you start looking at generational poverty, when you have had no one in the family who has worked for maybe two or three generations, then what you don't have, unfortunately, is the exposure to work, getting up every day, going to a job, understanding what the professional etiquette is, what dress
yep,
is,
yep,
those mm-hmm, business etiquette. You don't have anyone who serves as a role model. When you have our urban communities where our professionals have moved out into suburban communities, and so you don't have role models.
Mm-hmm.
I am a firm believer, when I was on the school board, I used to say our children can't be what they can't see. And if they're only seeing the TV where there are unfortunate stereotypical types of mentors and role models that are being displayed,
yep,
it doesn't give our young people the opportunity to see and be exposed to those opportunities in the workforce that they are poised to one day have.
I mean, that's just telling it like it is for a lot of people. But what a huge spectrum American teens are now spread across in terms of need and opportunity. Hannah in Cleveland, Ohio. Hannah, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think the biggest issue for me personally is what it all comes back to is the education and the university education, the four-year college degree, is I don't even have the option to not have a summer job. My tuition payments every month are more than my rent.
Ooh.
I am working two, three jobs throughout the summer and the school year just to be able to get that college education to someday be able to support myself financially. And there's such a big, I think, disconnect between those who have the option to, you know, not work. And yep. There was a father who had said that his parents, or he encourages his children not to work and that their scholarships are their job. And that's just never at any point been an option for me.
What's your working life look like now, Hannah?
I will, pretty much at this point, doing anything I can. I teach summer programs. I was a camp counselor for a while. I wait tables almost every night. And at the same time, I think that typical, like, nostalgic that scooping ice cream or being a lifeguard 4 days a week doesn't even cut it at this point.
Yeah.
I need to be working 6-7 days a week just to be able to afford my education.
Hannah, I really appreciate your call, and I wish you luck, and I just want to express my admiration for you getting it done. But, you know, that's not easy. I mean, Stephanie, there's Hannah who's, you know, this talk about doing less or doing something else, it's not even on the table, though she's getting it done.
So Hannah is exactly one of those individuals that I'm talking about. Whether or not, you know, this really isn't about black or white. This is about socioeconomics at the end of the day. And so... so many of those young people in the urban core don't even begin to look at higher education or those options because of exactly what Hannah just talked about and had the ability to be able to work 2 and 3 jobs. Again, not coming from a household who even understands that work ethic. I would love to be able to have someone like Hannah come and work my summer program any day of the week, because at least we know we would be putting the kind of income in her pocket to get her ready to go back to school in the fall.
Sounds like her work ethic is just fine. Thank you. Hannah, I appreciate your call. Carrie in Boston. Carrie, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
So in 2015, The Atlantic actually had a great article called The Coddling of the American Mind. And the two writers discussed the idea of vindictive protectionism from parents. And it's the whole idea that parents are being overprotective of their children and kind of manufacturing their kids to be too naive and not ready for the world. And I was wondering what your panelists thought about that contributing to a lack of interest in summer jobs.
Derek, what do you say?
Whew, boy.
Your magazine.
Vindictive protectiveness. It's my magazine. Yeah, and I guess I'm responsible for it. Vindictive protectiveness is is an interesting idea that essentially says that – I think actually the caller summed it up quite well, that in an ironic way, being overly protective of our children actually comes back to hurt them and prepares them poorly for professional life. You know, this is a complicated question to insert into this debate, because on the one hand, I feel rather strongly that the body of macroeconomic evidence that we have suggests that college education is really important and beneficial for the vast majority of students who go to and finish college in terms of it improving their career happiness and their lifelong incomes. At the same time, you don't want to have educational environments that are overly protective potentially of these children, of these teenagers and early 20-somethings, because it's true that you learn sometimes by experiencing and being exposed to ideas that you don't necessarily agree with. Sometimes you might be able to find this in a college classroom. Sometimes you might be able to find this working retail or, you know, working in a hotel, a teenage summer job. I don't think that it you know, is a specific argument for or against, you know, taking summer classes or you know, remaining in the workforce as a teenager during the summer. I think it's important to note, on top of everything that we're talking about, that no matter where you are in school or in the workplace, it's always important to expose yourself to viewpoints that you might not necessarily immediately agree with, because the mere confrontation of them will help expand your mind.
I mean, Carl Vick, the range of realities that young people face, as Stephanie Hightower and our callers remind us, is so great here. We talked earlier in the hour about social levelers, how military service was that for a time, how some kinds of summer employment or teen employment may have been that for some time. I mean, that does seem to be a missing thing if you've got a whole bunch of people headed quite away from the labor market in their teens. And others, and like those Stephanie's representing, who really need it and want it.
This is the world we've made. So on one level, the one Stephanie's describing, you know, where we have to – basically she's talking about teaching a culture of work to an overlooked population. And then we have where Hannah is working three jobs to go to school because she knows the importance of school. And then if you go to an elite university like Stanford, I spent a year at Stanford on a fellowship, and they have freshman entry level courses that are basically taught. It was one taught by Tobias Wolff called Journeys, and basically telling them you're here at Stanford now, and relax. It's like his theory of the class was. You guys, they have, you know, it's called deferred gratification. You work now for what will come tomorrow, and you don't take what, you know, you can't relax. And basically, he's saying, chill, you're here. Now
you're on the gilded lily pad.
Okay. Live a life. Yeah, in a gilded, yeah, believe me, you can stop, you know, constantly doing the duck thing, you know, where you're paddling furiously underwater and trying to look cool above. So, but that's at the elite level. And that's, you know, $40,000 a year tuition. And most people aren't going to go to that kind of school. I mean, the rise in people, the 50 to 70%, the rise from 50 to 70% people going to college, are a lot of these people are going for associate degrees in community college. And there's a lot of college that's still affordable. But the larger point, you can hear it in my voice, is kids can't relax anymore. You don't get to take the summer off.
Stephanie Hightower, what's your message to the potential employers in Columbus and to the country about what you see in this teen labor need?
Well, I would say this. I think that the need is great. The need is huge. I think that there are young people who are in the urban core who don't have and need to be taught the culture of work, as well as there are young people like Hannah who have a very strong work ethic that we need to continue to mentor, and we need to continue to provide opportunities for that next generation of leaders.
We are stretched out across a big boardwalk these days, but that's our country. Stephanie Hightower with Columbus Urban League, thank you very much for being with us today from Columbus, Ohio.
Thank you.
Carl Vick at Time Magazine, you got us going here with your piece, Where Did America's Summer Jobs Go? And we're grateful to you for joining us today. Thanks for coming on, Carl.
Thank you.
And Derek Thompson at The Atlantic. Thanks for all your work on this, Derek.
Thank you.
Listeners, good luck. Wherever you land, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.